Mr. LaFond, were you appointed?
I was.
Did we appoint you?
Yes, sir.
Okay, well, we thank you for your efforts.
Thank you.
Thanks. Mm-hmm. Okay, next case for argument, United States versus Roy. Ms. Silvers?
May it please the court and good morning. Marcia Silvers on behalf of Ankur Roy. Your Honors, I'd like to spend the bulk of my time today addressing the first issue that I raised in my briefs, which was the issue of whether Ankur Roy's constitutional right to a fair and impartial jury required the district court to hold an evidentiary hearing and investigate Juror B's email that described repeated premature discussions and about the case and expressions of a strong dislike of Ankur Roy. Your Honors, as the courts are aware, there's nothing more important to our judicial system than a fair and impartial jury. And that's why this issue strikes at the heart of the fairness of our judicial system. And there's one critical fact here that's in Juror B's email that I'd really like to focus on. And that is, not only did the entire jury room discuss the case many times from the very beginning of the trial, but on the very first day of the trial, before word of testimony was heard or opening statements were given, 10 jurors expressed a strong dislike of Ankur Roy with nothing to form their opinion except his foreign name and appearance.
When did this memorandum of Pablo Alvarez, when was that? Was that submitted to the judge? Or?
It was an email form that was sent to the judge. Yes, Your Honor.
How long after the trial was it sent to?
3 days.
3 days after the trial? Okay.
Yes.
Thank you.
He also contacted defense counsel by phone, but defense counsel refused to discuss the matter with him. In discussing this issue, I think it's important to note that the district court, in its order, made a mistake about the facts.
Let me ask you, what would you have liked the judge to do? We'd like him to talk to Alvarez in person, to summon all the jurors and interview them. What should he do? Or just declare a mistrial? Or?
No, Your Honor, that's a very good question. At the very least, because the jurors weren't questioned, we're never going to have a clear picture of the content or the extent of the disparaging remarks about Mr. Roy or the premature deliberations. So what I submit he was required to do under these circumstances would be to, at the very least, interview Juror B, who sent the email, and then hopefully that could resolve it, but if not, then go further and interview the rest of the jurors so that whatever it takes, we are not left with a void in the record as we have here, Your Honor.
Because there is an ambiguity. He says that everybody disliked Roy, but you could imagine them saying, well, we really didn't like that guy, but that wasn't why we, voted to convict. It was just separate. We happened not to like him, we didn't like his lawyer, but we wouldn't have convicted him unless we were persuaded that he was guilty. Would that be an adequate response to the judge?
That would be a possible response, but we'll never really
know.
Well,
I mean, if they said it and the judge believed it, then would that be enough? Would that end the inquiry?
If each one of the jurors said, well, we strongly disliked him, but we had no real bias towards him, would that end the inquiry? At that point, yes, I think that would. But the problem here is that we have a possibility here based on the fact that they formed their opinion with nothing, nothing before them.
The inquiry that you're talking about, though, to establish prejudice is prohibited by 606B, correct?
No, Your Honor.
You can't have a juror testify about the effect of information on his or her verdict, can you?
You can't have them testify about the effect of on their verdict, but they can testify as to the content of their statements and the extent of their statements.
During the trial?
During the trial, before deliberations. Mm-hmm. And the district court himself said that, and this court has said that, in Farmer mm-hmm. and in other decisions. Yes.
So then you would say that this, because here's the problem you have, of course, this all occurred not immediately after, but his statement comes 3 days after. So what rules should we adopt that, according to your argument, that, you know, 5 days, what if it had been 5 days or 10 days? Should the court still go back and ask?
I think, Your Honor, every case is different, but on the facts of this case, because we have a situation where there is a possibility of bias.
But let's assume it's the same kind of statement that was made, because we mm-hmm. have to think about not just this case, but the cases yeah. that come down the line. So what would be a reasonable period in your mind?
This court has never really addressed that.
Even if you get over the first hurdle.
And I would say it certainly was reasonable here, where it was only 3 days. It's still very fresh in their mind. What happened. And so I think it would be a period of time where you could ensure that there would be some accuracy in terms of their remembrance of what occurred. And certainly within less than a week, they would still very much, I would think, have fresh in their minds what had happened. So, yes, I think that would be a fair amount of time. One thing I did want to note is that the district court erroneously thought that the jurors had actually heard opening statements by the time they were expressing the strong dislike, but that's not really true. They were doing that during jury selection, which was on the first day. There were no opening statements on the second day. And as the court is aware, there's a number of cases in this circuit, including the Vasquez-Ruiz case, that also cites to the Resco case favorably, where courts have reversed because a district court's limited investigation into premature deliberations was held to be inadequate to expose the full extent of the taint.
Yeah, but of course these were all pre-verdict cases.
Those were, but those cases were also, our case, I think, Your Honor, is stronger than those cases because there's a real possibility of bias here that did not exist in those cases. And in those cases, there was some investigation. The court actually, in Vasquez-Ruiz, interviewed the juror who got the note. And in Resco, the court submitted interrogatories to the jurors, whereas here the district court did no investigation whatsoever. So I would think this case would be stronger, and as a result, we really don't know. We don't have a clear picture of the content or extent of what the disparaging remarks were, and that's because the district court did no investigation whatsoever. And the district court also made a mistake of law in deciding the issue, Your Honor, that I'd like to address, and that is that the Farmer case is a case that the court relied on a lot. It's this court's decision. And the court ruled, relying on Farmer, that an investigation into a juror's report about premature deliberations is only necessary if the allegations in the initial report itself show a presumption of prejudice. And that really was not the issue in Farmer. The issue in Farmer wasn't a failure to adequately investigate premature deliberations. The issue in Farmer was whether there should have been a motion for new trial granted or not. And the Farmer court held there that it's okay to ask jurors about the content of premature deliberations. That's not barred by Rule 606B. And then after asking the jurors then the court is to decide whether or not there's a presumption of prejudice, because the court can't, as Your Honor's pointed out, inquire as to whether the jurors were prejudiced. But at that time, after the court has asked questions of the jurors, they may. And so, in conclusion, Your Honor, because there was no investigation whatsoever, and we have a void in the record here, the court did not fulfill its responsibility under the Constitution of determining if prejudice resulted from these repeated premature deliberations in a case where there is a suggestion of bias, and we have what we know, a dark-skinned, black-haired Muslim man. And since 9/11, we know that many people are, in fact, prejudiced against Muslims. Unless the court has any questions regarding the other issues, I would just submit those on my brief.
Okay, thank you very much, Ms. Silvers. Ms. Marin?
May it please the court, my name is Maureen Marin, and I represent the United States. The district court did not abuse its discretion when it declined to hold a hearing or declare a mistrial.
I don't understand that. It's only 3 days after the trial. Why wouldn't the judge... There's ambiguity in what Alvarez said about dislike. That doesn't necessarily mean they were prejudiced. That their verdict was affected. But why not... invite them back and ask them, you know, what did they mean? Is Alvarez right? Did they dislike Roy? And why? Did it affect your verdict?
Your Honor, I think that while there is some ambiguity in a statement of dislike, we don't know exactly why they were disliked. This court and the Supreme Court has repeatedly recognized the significant dangers that
attend...
Could
you speak up, please?
Excuse me. This court and the Supreme Court have recognized the significant dangers that attend in calling jurors back after their term of service has been completed.
Well, what are the dangers?
Well, first of all, it would really upset the finality of most jury verdicts and I think the court recognized this in Farmer, that the validity of a verdict could be called into question.
But this is very unusual to have a juror, sending a message like this after the verdict.
It may not be usual. Certainly it's...
I don't think you should say it may not be usual.
Juror remorse is not unusual. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. But they don't write letters to the judge. Not often, right?
Obviously this juror had strong feelings about the deliberations and that caused him to write the letter to the court. But the concern is that bringing back jurors to testify, in essence, to have a mini trial about what happened when they were deliberating.
I don't think you want to encourage. I'm not suggesting you want to encourage. This is infrequent, and it seems a pretty extreme case from what Alvarado says, and there is a potential for prejudice here. I think as a judge would feel more comfortable if he talked to them and might very well be reassured that the verdict was honest.
Your Honor, I'd like to answer your question in a couple of parts. And the first part is, while all the juror said was that the jurors on the very first day expressed a dislike of the defendant, the district court found that there was no hint in the email or in the record that dislike was founded on anything except perhaps what the jurors were informed that the defendant was charged with. So even if you take that the juror meant the first day of trial to be the first day of jury selection as opposed to the first day of arguments, the jurors were still informed at the very beginning of the trial what the defendant was accused of. And the district court, who had the opportunity on the ground, so to speak, to observe the jurors and who sat through the trial, certainly read the email at most to suggest that perhaps the jurors did not like Mr. Roy because of what he was accused of, which was falsifying Medicare claims and victimizing a group of elderly senior citizens. There was no hint in the record whatsoever of the defendant's religion. There was a single mention by his wife in the defense case that the defendant was of Indian descent.
No, it's just that when Alvarez says every single juror in the room except for two had already expressed strong dislike of the defendant and his defense counsel from the very first day. So these were pre-deliberation discussions by the jury. And we always tell them, you're not to discuss the case before your deliberations begin. So at the least, we have, if Alvarez is telling the truth, the jurors start off the very first day, they're disobeying the judge. And that's a danger sign. And I would think, I mean, if I were trying such a case and learned about this, I'd want to find out what's going on. You know, there is a constitutional right to a fair trial, and if there's significant evidence that that right has been jeopardized, you'd think the judge would want to do something.
I think the key there is if there's significant evidence that the right has been jeopardized, which this court has framed as in the inquiry that Farmer asks us to conduct is,
We have a reason for telling the jurors, don't discuss the case before the deliberations begin. Right?
Correct.
Well, so they start right off the first day disobeying what the judge just told them to do. Now, isn't that a warning signal that you have a jury not going to pay attention to what the judge says?
It's not necessarily a warning signal. Because
it's not necessarily, but it is a danger sign. Don't litigants in jury trials, don't they have a right to some sort of minimally responsible jury consideration, including listening to the judges? You know, we're told, I'm not a trial judge, but I do conduct trials as a volunteer in the district court. And, you know, we're told you have to remind the jury every time, you know, you have a break. At the end of the day, you tell the jurors, remember, you're not to discuss the case before the deliberations begin. Now, this is considered important. And if the jurors flout this directive, it seems to me it's a danger sign.
I don't disagree, Your Honor, that no one here, this is not the kind of conversation that we encourage for exactly the reasons that you've put
it's
forth.
Not
They're
a
reprimanded
question of
for that.
Encouraging. It's not supposed to happen.
Correct, Your Honor, but we're unfortunately
You're
in
not
this
supposed
case
to disobey the judge. You know, we're careful. We tell the jury, this is your domain, this is your responsibility, this is what you decide, this is what I do, I tell you what the law is. You have to follow that, even if you disagree. And you're not to discuss the case. You're not to discuss the case with your family. You're not to do internet research. You're not to even discuss it with each other before the deliberations, right? And then you have a jury, apparently, now that he may be wrong or lying or misunderstanding, but from the very first day, they flout the judge's directions.
Certainly what happened was not ideal. That being said, the kind of statements that were alleged to have been made here are not more severe than similar cases which this court has analyzed.
I'm not reassured by being told about similar cases. I'd like to have a good reason rather than a precedent.
Well, the best reason is that when these allegations are being raised post-verdict, the calculus is different. There is no opportunity for the district court to correct or investigate.
Of course he can. He can ask, he can speak to the jurors And if he continues to be worried, he declares a mistrial.
If that were to be the rule, Your Honor, if every time a juror who was distressed by the deliberations makes an allegation that there were some statements made before the verdict, before deliberations began, then I think...
Well, I don't think some statements made. That's not what I find troublesome. It's the notion that they all decided on the first day that they don't like him and they don't like his lawyer. What's that about?
Well, it doesn't give us any more information of what happened on the second,
I know,
the third,
that's why you'd
day.
Want to have the judge ask these jurors about the first day and the second day. What was going on?
Well, what the judge had was statements by the jurors expressing dislike of the defendant. And under the rule, he's got to make this independent determination of whether those statements alone are presumptively prejudicial. So finding out from the jurors
what the actual effect is. Not whether it's presumptively prejudicial. It's whether this requires, in order to protect defendant's right to a fair trial, should I, the judge, interrogate these jurors? That's the issue.
And give it...
Counsel, so, this kind so of interrogation... Go ahead.
No. So you agree, though, that if this had come up before the verdict, it would be appropriate for the judge to make the inquiry?
Certainly the judge would need to have discussed with counsel what right. to do in this circumstance. There have been other cases, and one recently decided by this court, United States versus Wilborn, where an interrogation of the jurors when an allegation of pre-deliberation had come up was not ultimately appropriate. But certainly there's a range of responses available to the judge when this allegation is raised during trial that doesn't implicate the finality of verdicts the way that something cropping up 3-4 days after trial does.
And then let me ask you, was the jury individually polled in this case? You know, was this and is your verdict? Did that go to each? Did each juror answer that?
Yes, Your Honor.
So then that eliminated that comment that the one juror made, I suppose, when that one juror said the day after they had not individually voted on the individual counts, correct?
Correct. They did poll. I do not recall, Your Honor, if they polled the jury as to all of each of the counts individually, but they certainly polled them as to the final verdict.
And the district judge didn't indicate when he made this determination as to whether to do this inquiry what the motives might have been of this juror B and why juror B, for example, didn't raise this at the moment. Because according to juror B, right from the beginning they said they didn't like him. According to juror B, they were discussing the case, but he never said anything or never wrote a note to the judge at that time.
Correct. There was no indication until after the trial.
So just in terms of the judge making a final decision on whether to go and ask to inquire after the verdict, that could have been something under consideration, but it wasn't articulated by the judge, was it?
Initially, Your Honor, the first indication the judge had was this juror actually called his chambers and said he wanted to report jury misconduct. At that point, the parties agreed that because there was really no information as to what juror B was talking about, that we would need to call that juror in and examine him. I believe the very next day, the juror then took advantage of the online system and emailed the court deputy a lengthy discussion of what he believed to be the juror misconduct. And at that point, given the context of that 4-page, single-spaced email to the court felt that it had enough information to go forward. And I think when you look at that 4-page email, there's really no reason to suspect or to conjecture that there was more to what happened than what juror B had already laid out, because he had already submitted a very lengthy, very detailed 4-page email about exactly what he was disturbed
about.
Most
of it is about the deliberations rather than about this, the first day.
Correct, but I think the district court was justified in coming to the conclusion that if there was more to be said by juror B, he certainly would have said it in that 4-page email, that he didn't simply overlook an objectionable
honestly,
part of the deliberations.
How can you say that? He surely would have said it if there was more to say. He's just a juror, right? What do you expect him to say? To flesh out every portion of it? He obviously was more concerned about the deliberations.
The statements that he alleged to have were made, the sharing of thoughts regarding the trial.
And this business about polling the jury, it would be a very brave juror when they're being polled says, oh, no, I don't agree.
Oh, we've got cases like that.
Yeah, I've had cases like that.
We have
where
one.
The juror says, no, this is not my verdict.
That's good.
And then you have to send, then you have to take a recess, call counsel aside, take a recess, send the jury back, decide whether you're going to do another Silverman instruction. But you've had it, Judge Hamilton, happen to you.
Yeah, and this court has cases like that pending. Yeah. I would have thought, counsel, that the reason we give district judges, one of the reasons we give district judges discretion in handling this is simply because the inquiry itself is so fraught. One can invite jurors to come back downtown to the Dirksen building, for example. Is one ready to summon them and then to cross-examine them? In these kinds of inquiries, are counsel permitted to ask questions?
Your Honor, I couldn't find any cases discussing a court actually bringing back jurors to discuss pre-deliberation comments.
And is the defendant entitled to be there in person? Presumably.
One would imagine.
And one has to distinguish very carefully. I mean, most of this email, almost all of it is inadmissible under 606B, right?
Correct.
Because it's all about deliberations, almost all about deliberations. And then, so you've got to steer any inquiry away from anything having to do with deliberations and just deal with the recesses and breaks during trial and what was said in there, right?
That's correct. Okay.
Thank you.
I see that I'm out of time. If there are no further questions, Your Honor, we ask that the court affirm the defendant's conviction and sentence. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Ms. Marin. Ms. Silvers, do you have anything further?
Your Honor, I agree that this is an unusual case. This is a juror who took the time to write a very thoughtful 3-page email setting forth many, many issues regarding the jury misconduct, and there's a real potential for prejudice here. So this is an unusual case, and because of that, the court did not fulfill its obligation or responsibility to determine if prejudice had resulted. And this email alone is not sufficient to eradicate the possibility of prejudice. We will never have a clear picture of the content and the extent of the disparaging remarks that they made about him on the very first day of the trial without hearing a single word of evidence.
Don't you think it's odd that the juror didn't raise it when it occurred? Particularly when he says, you know, he clearly felt strongly about this.
I don't, Your Honor.
And the other things that he pointed out.
I don't, because the juror, on page 2 of the juror's email, the juror wrote, on several occasions, I felt the need to write the judge a note during the trial revealing the lack of following instructions in the jury room, most especially the disregard for presumed innocence. I felt I had no recourse to communicate since I had to get the note signed by another juror, and I was alone.
I don't understand that.
I don't either.
We had jurors
communicate all the times with courtroom deputies about child care or transportation or even concerns about what was going on in the jury.
So
Since we haven't interviewed her, no one ever questioned her. I don't know.
So did the court? Did the judge instruct that you couldn't send a note unless another juror signed it? Was that an instruction given, a preliminary instruction? I doubt it.
I'm not aware, Your Honor. Perhaps she thought the foreman had to send it. I don't know, Your
Honor. There was no foreman person selected at that point.
I think they selected the foreman at the very. That was that in her email. She said they selected the foreman at the very first thing. When she went to the restroom.
In deliberations.
In deliberations.
Yes, during
that's
deliberations.
Different.
Yes, that's correct.
No, what I'm saying is
preliminarily. Yes, that's true.
Preliminarily. The judge didn't say in the preliminary instructions when the jury was sworn to sit
on
the jury.
Yes, you're right about that. Yeah.
Never said that they couldn't write a note unless they had the signature of another person.
I'm not aware of it. I don't know why she felt that way. But The other issue that, the only other issue that really I would like to address is that the government has said that somehow because this is a post-verdict note that there was no necessity of requiring an investigation, even though it was only 3 days after this had occurred. And this court has never held that post-verdict revelations of jury misconduct never require an investigation. And in this case, the cases that this court has held on that apply here regarding bias, it has held that a suggestion of bias increases the need to investigate. And so even though these were post-verdict notes, there was still a suggestion of bias, making it a greater need for the district court to hold an evidentiary hearing.
By bias, you're speaking of ethnic and religious bias?
Yes, Your Honor.
And where, sorry, where is that suggested?
It's suggested because the only thing that the jurors knew about Mr. Ankur Roy was that he had a foreign name and that he is Indian in appearance. And the court has the PSI that shows his picture, and you can see what he looks like. And based on that alone, they were making comments that they strongly disliked.
That's your inference, in essence, from the email?
I think, Your Honor, it's more than an inference because we know from the email that they were making disparaging remarks about him and said they strongly disliked him. Now,
well, we said we have
no
counsel. Mm-hmm. We have the statement. Already expressed a strong dislike of the defendant and his defense counsel. Okay. That's it, right?
Every single juror in the room except two had already expressed a strong dislike of the defendant and his defense counsel from the very first day.
Okay. So
That's it.
We have no reports of indications, any expressions of religious or national origin bias or hostility in the rest of the email. Right?
No, the record is void, Your Honor, because there was no questioning of the jurors. So we don't really know what the remarks actually were.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Ms. Silvers and Ms. Moran, were you appointed, Ms. Silvers? Were you appointed?
No.
We thank you anyway. Okay.